Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadi Tulay Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kramle Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Lahasesha Samavadi Prasvati Rejitarane. Om Agyanta Mananda Sar Janajana Savataya Chakshas Militam Vena Tasman Sri Guru Vindama Sri Chaitanya on the response that he's been in the mood today. So I have a look at my house. Mine's a couple of seconds. So Nanda Maharaj entered, this is on the Dwadasi, he entered deep into the water of the river. What river? There. But he was arrested immediately by one of the servants of Arunadeva. This servant went to Nanda Maharaj before the demigod Varuna and accused him of taking a bath in the river at the wrong time. According to astronomical calculations, the time in which he took a bath was considered demoniac. The fact was that Nanda Maharaj wanted to take bath in the river Yamuna early in the morning before sunrise. But somehow or another, he was a little too early and he was bathed, and he bathed at an inauspicious time. Consequently, he was arrested. So we look at this from several points of view. Ultimately, we say that Nanda Maharaj was the true Noah of religious principles. And the time that he bathed in the Yamuna, because it has to do with the tikkis, the days, but it's not days as we know days, but it's an astronomical day. So there was a time when there was a very short tikki, and he had to break the Ekadasi before the tikki ended. And therefore he took bath in the Yamuna, and some of our acharyas had showed, quoted the Shastra, and so actually he was such a knower of religious principles that the time that he tried to bathe in this circumstance was actually completely correct, and he was not doing something improper, and rather there was a miscalculation by the Varuna Duta, the constable or order carrier Varunadeva. But aside from that, that the time was actually appropriate when he bathed, he was arrested. So, as we mentioned yesterday, what was going on was that he was taken down, and there was a tunnel. And Jiva Goswami describes this in Gopal Champo. There was a tunnel that he was brought to the presence of Varuna. There was a channel that was not full of water, and he was brought to a very distant place very quickly in this channel. And then when he arrived in front of Varunadeva, just by looking at the physiognomical features, in other words, the shape of his face and his and everything, Varunadeva could understand that this was Nanda Maharaj. This person was so pious and he was so pure, it was Nanda Maharaj. And he thought, oh no, when Krishna finds out that we've taken his father, he's going to be so angry. And he was immediately, Varunadeva was immediately in complete anxiety and fear. So he took Nanda Maharaj and placed him on a throne, and he offered him many gifts. So that's one side that was going on, what Varuna was thinking. And another side, because when you try to understand something, an event, you have to see it from many different points of view to understand it. So from the point of view of the residents in Vrindavan, who were with Nanda Maharaj, they saw Nanda Maharaj entering the water in the dark, and then he was taken away to Oh, the Varuna Dev, but what did it look like? It looked like he entered the water and he just didn't come up again. So that's called drowning. So how did they react to that? So the next part begins to describe that. When Nanda Maharaj was taken away by one of Varuna's servants, Nanda's companions began to call loudly for Krishna and Balaram. Now, it is to be understood that Krishna Balaram had not gone with Nanda Maharaj. They didn't go with them, but they called for Krishna and Balaram, and they were far away. But one of the good things about calling for Krishna and Balaram is that they hear everything. And no matter how far they are, they can come immediately. Because after all, it was early in the morning and their mobile phones must have been switched off, so they couldn't dial, what's that number? 000 or 11 or something. They couldn't dial any numbers because no one, there were no water, so their mobile phones, and there were no towers around, so many problems. So instead, because they had no alternative, now we have so many alternative things that we can do. We can take out our credit cards. They didn't have credit cards in those days, what to do? They didn't have mobile phones, what to do? So instead of taking shelter of these great devices that can free us of all anxiety and all difficulties, they had no other choice but to take shelter of Krishna. So how did they do it? They called out Krishna and Balaram. Immediately, Krishna and Balaram could understand that Nanda Maharaj had been taken away by a servant of Varuna. They immediately came. Now, the way that we'll read what's described over here. But then we'll also fill in some of the details as described in by other acharyas. So it describes that, so thus they went to the abode of Varuna, for they were pledged to give protection to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who are all unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Devotees, having no shelter other than the Supreme Personality of God, had naturally cried to him for help. Not called to him, but cry to him. So what's the difference between calling to Krishna and crying for Krishna? Crying to Krishna for help.
Comes from a different place.
Okay, what place does it come from? The calling. Where does calling come from? And crying comes from when you have no other alternative. That's the only time we cry. Except sometimes Matajis will cry when there's lots of alternatives, and that will be the first alternative. But Pitajis are a little bit different. When they feel they have no alternative, then they cry. What to do? Oh, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So Krishna had pledged to take shelter of all the residents of Vrindavan. Why? Because they were all unalloyed devotees of the Lord. What type of engineering did you study? And you? Structural? There's no... what's the other kind of engineer? The one who...
Civil,
the one who's chemical. Thank you. Chemical engineer. Chemical engineers, they what is the job of a chemical engineer? Yeah. So if you take some iron and mix different other metals into it, the iron is called steel, and then it will alter the qualities of the iron. You have to study this in structural engineering very much. You have to study this, the different qualities of the different kinds of steel. What happens when you mix titanium into iron? Forgot. What happens when you mix brass into iron?
Brass and iron.
Something like that. I should have called it Brian. That name has already been copyrighted by somebody. The journey's father had already copyrighted it, yes. And zinc, wow, sounds like it's from another planet. Get a higher price for it that way. So in any case, that type of a steel is an iron alloy. That means it has a mixture of iron in it. It has a mixture in addition to the iron metal. It's called an alloy. So people often would use the term unalloyed devotees. So that means no mixture. No or jhana, karma, anavrita. There's no mixture of subtle material desires in the form of jnana or gross material desires in the form of karma. So they were all, so Krishna pledged to give protection to the inhabitants of Vrindavan who are all unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So what does it mean they were unalloyed devotees? The devotion to Krishna had no mixtures in it. There was not any tinges of selfishness. It was everything for Krishna. So Krishna was pledged to give protection to the inhabitants of Vrindavan who are all unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So if we, because the fear is, of course, that if I become a devotee of Krishna and give everything to Krishna and only think about his welfare, what is the fear? If I'm only thinking about Krishna and I'm not thinking about numero uno, if I make number one. Oh, that's right. You know that from Spanish, yeah? Looking out for numero uno. You know?
Uno means one.
Yeah, number one. If I don't look out for me, no one's going to look out for me. But the point is that if we look after Krishna, who is the real numero uno, we are all counterfeit. Duplicate, as they say in India, yeah? Duplicate. Duplicate numero uno. Then, how much can we really look out for ourselves, even if we are looking out for ourselves? But if Krishna is looking out for us, who we are? So they went to the abode of Varuna, for they were pledged to give protection to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who were all unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Devotees having no shelter other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that we take shelter of so many other things other than Krishna, or we take shelter of Krishna plus, just in case he lets us down, we have other things that we take shelter of as well. Mixed. That's not unalloyed. They naturally cry to him for help, exactly like children who do not know anything but the protection of their parents. Little children, they're not in anxiety, even when they're in dangerous situations, if their parents are present, because they know of their parents' affection for them, and for them, their parents are all-powerful. Practically speaking, they may not be all-powerful, but in the mind of the child, the parent is all-powerful. So therefore, they're not in anxiety, even in dangerous situations. So therefore, the devotees, knowing no other shelter than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they naturally cried to him for help. It's natural, because they're devotees. And what does it mean to be a devotee? It means one who has placed his entire hope, his entire shelter, all his devotion with full faith in at the lotus feet of Krishna. He's placed himself the Lord Jesus Christ. So what does it take to be that kind of a devotee? It takes surrender, it takes faith, it takes a lot of piety, like it takes a lot of devotional experience to be so pure, to be so sincere. And the platform that we were always and only looking to Krishna for our shelter is called the platform of Nishtha, when we are fixed in that, fixed and focused as Krishna, with Krishna as our shelter, and that is the platform on which we can say that bhakti actually begins. We can say that. There's other ways to describe it, but we can also say that. So Krishna immediately went to Varuna. Why? Because his father had been taken by Varuna, and he's always protecting his devotees. Kanteyapati Zanini Name Bhakti Panasiti. Now, so the residents of Vrindavan, they began to cry for Krishna's help because they thought Nanda Maharaj had drowned. And even though he was far away, they came. Krishna and Balaram came. But the way that the Gopal Temple describes it, describes how Krishna told Balaram, you immediately go to see Mother Yashoda and reassure her that everything is going to be all right. Because if she sees what's going to happen next without you being there, because Krishna was going to jump into the water of the Yamuna, and what would it look like? It looked like first Nanda Maharaj drowned, and then it looked like Krishna drowned. And what would Mother Yashoda do? She would immediately die. So Krishna told Balaram, you go to Mother Yashoda and you tell her, oh Maya, everything is going to be all right. Nanda Maharaj, don't bring back Nanda Maharaj, don't worry, Krishna went to get him. Everything's going to be all right. Because previously, at the time of the Kaliya serpent, when Krishna was enwrapped in the coils, Balaram wasn't in anxiety. So his credibility was very high. People would believe him. Mother Yashoda believed him. Balaram wasn't disturbed, and he said, don't worry, Krishna's going to be all right. He's wrapped in Kali right now, but don't worry. And indeed, Krishna was all right. So now, only because Balaram was telling Mother Yashoda, don't worry, Maya, Krishna's going to bring back Nanda Maharaj. Don't worry, not even for a moment. Otherwise, Mother Yashoda would have gone, died right there of a broken heart, because Krishna had entered the water and didn't resurface. So Krishna entered the water, and from the point of view of the residents of Vrindavan who were at the shore of the water, what did it look like? What did it look like had happened when Krishna entered the water and he went to the abode of Varuna? Yeah. So Krishna was everything to the residents of Vrindavan, so they began to lament and cry. And there's a description, if you have the book, in Ananda Vrindavan Champu of Srimati Radharani, how she reacted when Krishna went into the water. And I think I mentioned this recently, she was so distraught, she fainted to the ground, and she was in so much distress that she began to die. And the only thing that kept her alive was that one of her friends kept saying, Krishna's right here in front of you. Why are you thinking that he's not here? He's right here in front of you. She's right here. And therefore she kept alive. So all the people who have told you ever since you are a little boy or a little girl that you shouldn't lie, they weren't telling you the full truth. They were telling you a general principle. General principle is you shouldn't lie. But sometimes, for the pleasure of as devotees, sometimes we have to. And that's the highest principle, is to do what is pleasing to Krishna. But, looking at it from another point of view, actually the person who told Srimati Radharani that Krishna is right here, what's the problem? She was also telling the truth. Because where is there a place that Krishna isn't? So, maybe it's better not to tell a lie. Only speak the truth. And also, when Srimati Radharani is feeling separation from Krishna, certainly Krishna is there in that separation. So actually, only tell the truth. Never tell lies. But be careful that everything you say is pleasing to Krishna. So, from that perspective, that's what happened on the shore. And then, Gopal Champa describes that when Krishna, and how was Varuna thinking? Varuna was full of terror because he knew that Krishna was going to come to rescue his father, because he knows that Krishna always protects his devotees. He knew that Krishna would come, and what did he was thinking, what's Krishna's mood going to be when he comes? And what do you think his mood was going to be? What did Varuna surmise that Krishna's mood was going to be?
Anger.
Oh, why would he be angry?
By my father.
Yeah. He dared to take my father? And naturally, he was going to be so angry. And indeed, Krishna was so angry. And he assumed a form that was embedded and full of fury. And his eyes were so red that no one could even look at him in the eye. And he became so ferocious and angry. Would you like to see this form? No. Then don't do anything that gets Krishna angry. Because Nanda Maharaj cannot do anything wrong. So Varuna Dev, he placed Nanda Maharaj on a throne and gave him gifts, placed gifts before him, and then he went out to the outskirts of his kingdom to wait for Krishna. He was so afraid because he wanted to see Krishna immediately as soon as he came, so he would be able to satisfy him, so he wouldn't burn up everything with his anger. So Krishna immediately went down the channel, went to the abode of Varuna Dev in his ferocious form, and then Varuna Dev saw him coming, and he was fearful, and he bowed down again and again, and he began offering prayers to Krishna and saying, "Oh Krishna, your father is right there, just see him, he's right there, he's fine, we're taking very good care of him, just look, just see him, he's right there." So Krishna, when he saw Varunadev's mood of complete supplication, of complete obedience, and that his father was all right, he became peaceful. And he said, "Please take me to my father." So we have heard what this incident looked like from the shore, from the point of view of Krishna, from the point of view of Varunadev, from the point of view of Srimati Radharani, from the point of view of Mother Yasoda, and what did it look like from the point of view of Nanda Maharaj? And during this whole time, Nanda Maharaj was sitting on the throne, thinking, with his eyes closed, thinking, "My boy Krishna is so nice. He's so wonderful. Did you see the way he held up Govardhan Hill with just the little finger of his left hand for 8 days? And he was, and did you see the way he was herds the cows, even though he's such a young boy. And you see the way that everyone loves him. And you see the way his eyes are so lotus-like. And you see how cleverly he speaks. And you see how this, and you see that. And Krishna is so wonderful. He's just sitting there with his eyes closed, meditating on Krishna. He didn't know where he was. He didn't know he was in the abode of Varunadeva, because for him he was always and only with Krishna, and his love for Krishna. This is what it is like to be Vrijavasi. Only and always with Krishna. Only and always with Krishna. Due to the intensity of love. Prema Bhakti. Very high prema. So Krishna told Varunadeva, bring me to my father. Yes, yes, yes. So he brought Krishna to Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj felt the presence of Krishna right in front of him. And then Krishna said, Father, I have come. Please place the lotuses that are your feet on the path and we will go home. So Nanda Maharaj opened his eyes. And you know what he saw right in front of him? Krishna. He was so happy because he saw Krishna. So the demigod, now we're going back to how it's described in the Krishna book. The demigod, Varuna, received Krishna with great respect and said, my dear Lord, actually at this very moment, because of your presence, my life as the demigod Varuna has become successful. So we can see why Varuna didn't just immediately return to Maharaj, because he wanted the great fortune of seeing Krishna. Because previously we've heard how Lord Brahma saw Krishna and he acknowledged Krishna's position, and then we saw how Indra saw Krishna and acknowledged that Krishna's position as the Supreme, and now we see how Varunadeva saw Krishna and acknowledged his position as Supreme. Now, at this very moment, because of your presence, Varuna says, my life as the demigod Varuna has become successful. Although I am the proprietor of all the treasures in the water, I know that such possessions do not make for a successful life. But at this moment, as I look at you, my life is made completely successful, because by seeing you, I no longer have to accept the material body. Therefore, O Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Brahman, and Super Soul of everything, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. You are the Supreme Transcendental Personality. There is no possibility of imposing the influence of material nature on you. I'm very sorry that my foolish man, by not knowing what to do or what not to do, has mistakenly arrested your father, Nanda Maharaj. So I beg your pardon for the offense of my servant. I think it was your plan to show me your mercy by your personal presence here. My dear Lord Krishna, Govinda, be merciful unto me. Here is your father. You can take him back immediately. So then, in this way, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, rescued his father. And then he took him, and when he was leaving, Varunadeva offered more prayers to Krishna, and he gave him wonderful presentations of cloth, of jewels, of this and that, and he sent him back. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead rescued his father. And then, what did it look like from the shore? He came to the surface, Nanda Maharaj, with Krishna. And how do you think the residents of Vrindavan felt when they saw, because they were lamenting and lamenting and lamenting, first we lost Nanda Maharaj, then we lost Krishna. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And suddenly, and presented him before his friends, Nanda Maharaj's friends, bringing him great jubilation. Nanda Maharaj was surprised. Why was he surprised? That although the demigod, Varunadev, was so opulent, he had offered such respect to Krishna. He was chanting, he was praying to Krishna. He said this and that about Krishna. He glorified him as the Supreme Lord. This was very astonishing to Nanda. Why? Because Lala was just my baby. He's such a wonderful boy, that I know, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he told all his friends. All his friends, what the demigod had said. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I was with Varuna. I saw it with my own eyes. Varuna Dev was worshiping Krishna. I saw it. It's true. I saw it. I heard everything Varuna Dev said. And it's not, you know that Krishna is so wonderful. But he's more than just wonderful. I heard Varuna Dev say he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Nanda Maharaj began to describe the incidents to his friends and relatives with great wonder. Actually, though Krishna was acting so wonderfully, Maharaj Nanda and Mother Yasoda could not think of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead, they always accepted him as their beloved child. Thus Nanda Maharaj did not accept the fact that Varuna had worshipped Krishna, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, he took that because Krishna was such a wonderful child. He had been respected even by Varunadev. But now, the friends of Nanda Maharaj, all the coward men, they heard Krishna, even Varuna accepts Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. And they began to think, what is going to happen to us? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we love him, and he loves us. When we leave this world, what is going to happen to us? Is he going to live? Are we going to get liberation? What's going to happen to us? They became very excited. So they became eager to know if Krishna was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if he was going to give them all salvation. So they began to talk amongst each other. Is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What's going to be? Is he going to take us to the spiritual world? Is he going to give us liberation? And Krishna understood their minds. And in order to assure them of their destiny in the spiritual kingdom, oh, he did something. But I'm not going to tell you what he did. And not only that, I'm not going to tell you tomorrow. And not only that, tomorrow? Yeah. And not only that, I'm not going to tell you Sunday. And not only that, on Monday, there's no class. And not only that, because it's Monday. He leaves on Tuesday. This one.
Anyone?
Aww.
And then on Tuesday, Baladev's gonna be gone. How can we have class? And then on Wednesday, it's 2 days before I leave. So we can't have class on Wednesday or Thursday. And on Friday, we can have class, but I won't be here. And then Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we come back. And then Tuesday, we have class. You can leave yourself.
Oh, it sounds like a horrible weekend.
Boy, there's so many wonderful things you can do. Complete little people. You want to hear?
That means that nandagram will be closed.
How many windows did I get today?
Two.
Two more?
No, I'm just finishing the...
Oh, the top one?
Yeah.
What to do? Yeah. This is a real, what do they call it? When they end the episode at such a point that no one's able to sleep. Well, will Krishna bring the residents of Vrindavan? What did he show them? What did he do with them? It's actually very wonderful what he did, especially the way he described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Comments?
Are you telling us in a nice way that they want another class to be
in the two times? Unless, in the Baladev can't be class, because he's not going to be here. And she better run.
I think if I give class, I just get a record.
Huh?
I just get the record and hear it.
Otherwise, you'll never know what happened.
You
can send
your
list. You can make your connection with Sri Ramananda will happily be there. Deva. Deva. Dorupi. Any questions? You got a question?
I know you said bhakti begins when you are fit nishtha. So
that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. So what level is your anasthanya vritti is at? When you are fixed, what level is your anasthanya vritti is at? Is it still existing or
when you're nishtha?
Yeah. So because bhakti begins after nishtha.
Then you're doing, you can say preliminary work that leads to bhakti, and that could also be known as bhakti, called bhakti, because it leads to bhakti. So bhakti means when Krishna is firmly your shelter. That's how some of the acharyas have described.
Then what's the level of your
anasthanya vritti? You can say it's preliminary to bhakti.
Mm.
You can say not just keep you from taking full shelter of Krishna. Or you can say when you're performing the process, it leads you to, because it leads you to bhakti, it's also called bhakti. There's different ways of looking at it. But there's something so mysterious in devotional service that the purest devotees think of themselves so full of anuttas. They think of themselves lower than anything. They're so humble. So it gives us a hint that we're thinking, when will I get rid of these anuttas? Then I won't have to, then I'll be pure. But even though one becomes pure, one doesn't think of himself as pure. One thinks of himself as more and more fallen. Very mysterious.
I mean, there's false ego in that sentiment, when will I get rid of this?
An artist? No, I don't think it's false ego, but it's just mysterious. That's the way I look at it. Because when will it... Yeah, because it must be, for the great devotees, it's so painful that what are they aware of, though? They're already pure devotees, they have prema bhakti, but what are they aware of? That they feel so fallen. Is it real? Is it not real?
This isn't just guilt to them.
But it's
something that's so extraordinary, if they're so extraordinary, and they perform, then it's a perception of something.
The difference is that they're not putting themselves in the center of the emotion.
When I get involved, and I just, when will I be seen as the sort of Krishna, something like that?
Yeah.
But what are they, okay, yes, that's a nice point. But what are they seeing as the impurities? Is it really there or not really there? So what are they, seeing if they're seeing something that's not there? How do they see something that's not there? Maybe I can't figure it out. Maybe you can figure it out.
It's a part of their expression.
But what are they seeing? They're actually experiencing themselves. Like that. But what are they seeing?
Maybe they want to look at
empty. Well, since you don't know, you're going to get that answer.
Isn't that
yes.
Humility is the nature of the soul.
Yes.
The element of the soul.
Yes.
The soul is
yes, but what are they seeing that makes them feel so fallen? I'm lower than a worm. But if you just say, if I'm lower than a worm, yes, but
I'm very small.
Yeah, it seems to be true that the natural consciousness of the soul is full humility.
Mm-hmm.
And this is said in Brihadbhagavatam, that my humility is no different from prema, from love for Krishna. But what are they seeing? It makes them think of themselves so fallen. If you see Krishna as being great, and you see yourself being tiny, but being tiny isn't the same as feeling yourself as so faulty and lowly and terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's just tiny.
But if a person is doing PhD and somebody else is doing, and the child is learning ABC, but the child is learning ABC, what they're seeing is there before them makes them feel that this is really hard. So the person is doing that, who's the expert is in the PhD, he may also express this is really hard, but what he's the level that he's on is quite different than the child.
Yes, yes, certainly. But,
so if they're,
but what is the hardness?
Experience of the all-loving personality, and they're receiving their real side, and it doesn't depress them that they feel like that. They don't get depressed. The prophet would say things that didn't get depressed. You know, I don't have low self-esteem. Like, you know, I said falling, I'm just now more fallen.
The more I think about how fallen I am, is anyway. But I, yeah, but yeah, that's what I can't figure out. What is it? What are they seeing? Anyway, can't understand. Can't understand from here.
They're not full of themselves.
Yes, when they're full of the Krishna, so why do they feel themselves so faulty?
But they don't always feel like that.
Only when they think about it.
No, they also do all kinds of things. They, you know, they sometimes chastise Krishna, they sometimes pull his ear, they sometimes climb on his back, you know, and they, you know, they do all kinds of things.
But that's when I'm talking about women in this mood.
But here, aren't they also exhibiting the mood of a sadhaka or an ideal
sadhaka? I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Mm.
Show others?
No, not to experiencing it. Not to experiencing themselves, not just to show others.
But those sentiments in our bhajans are not necessarily written for others.
No, right. But when they come here, they're performing one service. When they're there, they're performing another service.
Mm.
So you understand it. Oh, that's what I was just going to say. I can't understand. Okay. Good night.
It's
serious. It seems to be something inherent in the consciousness of the pure soul is humility, Danya, and something
in the consciousness of an impure soul is pride.
It's the same way that you mentioned, like, probably pride. You can hear Prabhupada say things that would sound to him.
So that's different. But that's different because he's taking the position. It's just a service to speak like an acharya. It's different. Hare Krishna. It's been nice.
This weekend never ends.
No, no. Will you come back after, or will you just float away?
No, I'll come back here.
Yeah. Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Okay. Apologies. Lord Jagannath come specially today?
Because this was the last class.
He knows everything. He looks. So what happened next? What happened next? Hey, Gopal. Do you have a Gopal?
Yes, yeah, Gopal.
Who else do you have in your house?
We have just Gopal.
Oh,
you
Gopal.
Too, Gopal.
How big is your Gopal?
Very tiny, similar, same size, or slightly bigger.
Very small.
Just a little boy.
Did he come with you?